Welcome to the reading of the Quad City Times for today, Monday, the 22nd of April, 2024. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of people with print disabilities. Your readers today are Carol Lockard and Jeff Cassett. Here's Carol with our first story.
Thank you, Jeff. Celebration of Augustana College set for the 75th anniversary. Augustana College's Geography Department will celebrate its 75th anniversary next weekend, featuring a slate of alumni presentations on Saturday, April 27th, at John Deere Planetarium. Presentations are free and open to the public, running from 9 a.m. to noon. The John Deere Planetarium is located on Augie's campus at 820 38th Street in Rock Island. Attendees can expect to hear about how Augie alumni are leading and contributing to important work within their chosen fields today. Featured alumni speakers include Tom Clack, class of 79, who will present on speed breeding to restore the American chestnut, a keystone tree species in the eastern United States. Second, Dawn Carlson, class of 90, who will present on alternative intersection design. Third is Brad Jokic, class of 89, who will present on the international Latin American migration. Fourth is American Emeritus Dr. Norman Moline, class of 64, will kick off the public events by sharing the history of Augie's Geography Department. The anniversary weekend is a time to celebrate the role of the department as an important part of a liberal arts education, he said in an Augie News release. The alumni presentations will be a great opportunity for the public to learn about the terrific faculty and alumni engaged in sharing key geography concepts and skills of the 21st century. More than 70 geography alumni are expected to return for the weekend, which also includes socials and field trips. Returning alumni will tour key Quad City sites and explore the Mississippi River aboard the scholarship, Augie's research boat for the geography department. Augie currently serves 37 geography majors and 42 students minoring in geographic information, science, and technology. The department engages students in various work-related areas and work, including climate change, sustainability, urbanization, resource management, and environmental justice. In addition to the major or minor, Augie students can also opt for a coordinated 3+3 Master of Landscape Architecture degree program with the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Jeff?
Lind to receive Eddy Award. Pulling weeds grew into a volunteer effort on Moline's Parkway. She couldn't resist. As Mary Lynn walked and biked along Moline's Ben Butterworth Parkway in 2004, she noticed the parkway's original planting beds from the 1980s had become overgrown, and she couldn't resist stopping to pull weeds and dead head spent flowers. It was when the city was having severe budget cuts and there was no money for the maintenance of these beautiful gardens that they had planted when the parkway was developed in the early 1980s, Lynn said at that time. There were weeds, so I thought, well, I can weed. The Mississippi Riverfront Parkway has 17 distinct gardens, though, and Lynn quickly realized that with more people, more weeds could be pulled, so she enlisted the help of her book club friends. Club members adopted a garden and then decided to take their work a step further by planting additional flowers for more color. In time, this pilot project involving one club grew to involve more volunteers, other book clubs, families, couples, and businesses, until now every garden on the parkway has been adopted by volunteers, and they have a formal relationship with the city through its Keep Moline Beautiful program. Volunteers are called Garden Guardians, and Lind is in charge of overseeing their work. For these efforts, going for 20 years, Lind will be recognized on Thursday, May 2nd with an Eddie Award from River Action Incorporated in the category of stewardship. She'll be one of seven receiving awards from the Davenport nonprofit that strives to foster the environmental, economic, and cultural vitality of the Mississippi River and its riverfront in the Quad Cities region. The awards will be part of the group's 40th anniversary Fish and Fire Friendraiser and Fundraiser dinner in the Quad Cities Waterfront Convention Center, Bettendorf. The awards celebrate those who've gone against the current, as in an eddy, to accomplish outstanding work in the categories of education, art, river activity, revitalization, and stewardship. In addition, a special recognition award will go to Jeff Nelson for 40 years of leadership as the CEO of Metrolink and his fostering of environmental, safety, economic, and community building activities. For Lind, her work with the Garden Guardians program has been going on for so long that she has it down pat. In early spring, she emails volunteers to see if they'll be back for another year, and if not, seeks replacements. If groups want to plant new materials, Lind makes their applications, or takes their applications, places orders, and arranges a day for pickup. The planting beds, originally installed by the city, provide a backbone of trees, shrubs, perennial flowers and grasses, and some landscaping such as rocks, Lynn said. But additional perennials and annuals add to the beauty of the parkway. In the beginning, volunteers paid for plants out of pocket or transplanted from their own gardens. But for the past 5 years or so, the Garden Guardians has been getting a $3,500 grant from the Moline Regional Community Foundation, Lynn said. Also in the beginning, volunteers had to supply their own water, a task that was challenging at any time, but especially during hot, dry years. Lind recalls a man from one group who rigged up a pump like a stock tank pump and pumped out of the river for a time. Now the city waters the beds, usually twice weekly, Lind said. The city also provides mulch that, like water, previously was volunteer supplied. It's easier to get volunteers if some of the hard work is provided, Lynn said. At present, about 50 people volunteer, and they come from all over, not just Moline, Lynn said. One group consists of a book club with members from Davenport and Bettendorf. At one time, there was a group called the Out-of-Towners, and another time, there was a mom who volunteered because she wanted her children to learn about gardening. Lynn sends encouraging emails through the season and in late summer, organizes a thank you party. New groups get T-shirts and gloves. Thank you for your leadership, volunteer Deb Slothauer said of Lynn in an award nomination submitted by Kristen Berggren, another volunteer. Your timely messages, advice, plant suggestions, and purchases go a long way in keeping us informed and motivated. We wouldn't do it without you. The Ben Butterworth Parkway was dedicated on the Moline, Mississippi Riverfront in 1984 with 1.8 miles of paved trail. It has since grown to 4.5 miles of trail extending from 22nd Street to 55th Street, covering about 40 acres, according to the city's website. It includes playground equipment, shelters, boat ramps, restrooms, and benches. In addition to shepherding the Garden Guardians, Lind is a member of the Keep Moline Beautiful Commission, whose stated purpose is to work with volunteers to create a healthy, sustainable community environment, promoting beautification, litter prevention, and recycling. Lynn was particularly active in promoting recycling when the city's curbside program first started. Her home's family room became a meeting place for city staff, employees of Midland Davis, the company that picked up recycling, and teachers and book club members. Teachers were invited with the thought that if kids could be educated on how and why to recycle, parents would come along. Lynn helped staff informational booths at community events such as Bald Eagle Days and in schools. She helped arrange field trips to the Scott Area Recycling Center and contests with prizes for posters promoting recycling. Carol?
Thank you, Jeff. Education in Iowa, March 1st, open enrollment deadline. Likely return lauded. In June of 2022, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds eliminated the state's March 1st deadline for open enrollment requests. Now it's likely coming back. This comes as Iowa lawmakers pass Senate File 2435, the state's annual education appropriations bill, on Thursday evening, sending it to the governor's desk, including a cause to reinstate a deadline for families and students looking to transfer out of their resident school districts. The March 1st deadline for the next school year applies to students entering grades 1 through 12, while kindergartners and preschoolers in special education programs may open enroll up to September 1st of the school year. Davenport Superintendent T.J. Schneckloth said, "We appreciate the legislator reinstalling the March 1st deadline. This will help districts plan for the next school year with more accurate enrollment and budget projections." The bill also includes a process to, excuse me, folks, to open enroll even if family misses the March 1st deadline, although this would require good cause and board approval. Without the deadline, families could open enroll their children into any Iowa school district at any time. As previously reported, local superintendents agreed the lack of a deadline made it difficult for school districts to plan their annual budget and other logistics, such as staffing. Overall, it's a good thing for families and it's a good thing for school districts, North Scott Superintendent Joe Studding said of the deadline returning. We've been pushing it all year and our local elected officials all have been supportive in trying to get this through. Bettendorf Superintendent Michelle Morse echoed this, extending her personal thanks to Representative Gary Moore and Senator Scott Webster, both Republicans from Bettendorf, for their local advocacy and support. The move will help districts adjust staffing as needed, Morse added, better ensuring all students receive high-quality instruction. The initial bill to reinstate an open enrollment deadline, Senate File 2011, was introduced by Senator Chris Cornoyer, a Republican from LeClaire, who is a former Pleasant Valley school board member. Moore said he viewed the reinstatement as watching taxpayer dollars. A school district might set their budget at a certain level by the deadline, but if they have a large number of students open enroll, in or out, their costs could go up or down substantially, he said. Yet they're not able to account for that because they already have set their budget. As previously reported, Cornoyer echoed similar thoughts in her rationale behind SF 2011. As in any business, Moore said it's hard to operate with fluctuating costs. If you're going to limit your income, you've got to be able to limit your expenses as well. That's the theory behind, he said. I'm a big supporter of reinstituting an open enrollment deadline. Iowa lawmakers also included new attendance requirements in SF 2435. For example, students would have to return to their home school district if they became habitually truant while opening enrolled at another. Morse commended the bill's inclusion of this language, extending another heartfelt thanks to Moore for authoring the update. The collaboration we as local superintendents have with our local legislators is deeply appreciated, she said. Likewise, Studding calls the truancy update a positive for school districts because I think that puts more ownership on families, he said. If you truly want to open enroll, you have to make sure students get to that school building. As previously reported, Iowa Quad City students choosing open enrollment has increased by about 33% over the past 5 years. As of August 2023, even while overall local enrollment has decreased by 2.6%. In this time, Davenport schools have lost the most to open enrollment, while Bettendorf, despite an approximate 4% drop in total enrollment, has consistently shown the biggest gains. I would say those trends were already established, Morse said previously. It had less to do with any changes in the law. At the start of the 2023 and 24 school year, Pleasant Valley was the only local school district to experience a decrease in the percentage of students leaving via open enrollment and saw its first net gain in enrollment by 8 students in 5 years. Compared to Quad City Metro counterparts, North Scott's open enrollment trends have remained relatively flat. However, percentage of students attending North Scott via open enrollment jumped from 6% in the 2021-22 school year to just under 9% in 2022 and 23. Jeff, back to you.
Schools dedicate its new gymnasium. The project is a part of a two-phase program. Ann Lovelady shot baskets in the new gym Friday at Quad Cities Christian Schools in Moline in an effort to warm up for a game of alumni versus the school's varsity girls basketball team. Lovelady played basketball back in the late 1990s when the school was then known as Temple Christian Academy. That was before Temple Christian Academy, located at 2305 7th Avenue in Moline, and Quad Cities Christian Schools merged in 2017 to form one school. Shooting baskets under the bright lights on a freshly polished basketball court in what is called the Eagle's Nest, Lovelady remarked with a beaming smile, "I would have been a better basketball player if I'd had this." Our gym was down the alley from our school, and it was half the size of this, she said. Several hundred people, current and former students and their families, attended the Be the Change celebration to commemorate the completion of the new gymnasium and to raise money for the future school projects. The new gym seats 500, and it was nearly standing room only as the women warmed up for their 15-minute game with a running clock. The second game featured the alumni men taking on the varsity boys basketball team for a game with 2 15-minute halves and a running clock, and no one left the event. Jeremy Steiner, superintendent of Quad Cities Christian Schools, said the gym building was phase one of the plans for growth, the school that has seen growth in its student body over the past 5 years. When I came here 5 years ago, we had 62 students at this campus, which houses our grades 6 through 12, he said. 5 years down the road, we're running at 171 students. The kindergarten and elementary school students through 5th grade still attend classes at the original 7th Avenue campus, while the junior and senior high school classes are held on the campus at 4011th Street in Moline, the site of the former Blackhawk Elementary School building. The new gym building is 11,420 square feet. It also has 2 large modern classrooms, locker rooms, restrooms, and a concession stand. Construction started in May 2023. When I came here, my goal was to create a safe environment where strong academics and spiritual growth can happen, and I feel like that's what we're losing in today's world, the safe environment where you can get strong academics and also spiritual growth, he said. Obviously, we're a Christian school, so the desire was to create a safer environment by adding 2 classrooms and the gymnasium so we can be in one facility, he said. While they could have cut corners on the classroom sizes, Steiner said we had the option to put a normal classroom and go 5 feet short or go to the edge of the pre-existing design, which was the gym. We chose the latter option, so yes, they're huge. Zach Bollinger, a 1997 graduate of Temple Christian Academy, took to the court saying he could hardly believe it. "This is amazing," he said while shooting baskets, warming up for his upcoming game against the varsity boys team. "We always grew up with a gym that we couldn't play in because it was too small. We always played at Black Hawk College for our home games, so even our home games were away games." Senior Piper Aki also has been playing basketball for the Eagles since she was starting in ninth grade. Said she's excited for the new gymnasium. "We're playing our games at the First Church of the Nazarene in Rock Island," she said. "It wasn't as nice as here. We couldn't wait to be here and play." Otschke said that now half of her classes were in the new building with its spacious classrooms. "We all really liked the small environment of our old classrooms, but it was nice to get into a little bit bigger room and have some space," she said. "Space is nice sometimes." Looking around, Otschke said, "They did a first-class job." Longtime teacher Laura Stout, who began teaching at the school in 1993, retired in 2000, but went back in 2004, stayed for a few years, and then came back in 2018, before finally retiring for good in 2022. She marveled at the size of the facility. "They didn't cut any corners," Stout said as she sat in the gym waiting for the games to start. "This is just unbelievable. Jeremy Steiner did a fantastic job with all the decisions." Stout said the new gym and classrooms were needed as the school's student population had exploded. "I credit that to the word of mouth, good testimony from other parents," she said. "They see how this school is an advantage to their children, and it's just blossomed." She said the school's teachers and the parents of the students all had the same goals and values, so they all work together. "The main thing is the students," she said. "You got to get them ready to go out into the world." Boys basketball coach Scott Carl said the school had really grown and the basketball program had made real progress over the past 3 years. "But now, with the new gym and a real home for the team, it should all take off. Hopefully, this will bring more attention from the community and people might want to consider sending their children here," Carl said. "I'll take more basketball players anytime." Carol?
Thank you, Jeff. And from Nation and the World page, U.S. aid package spurs warnings. Ukrainian and Western leaders on Sunday welcomed a desperately needed aid package passed by the U.S. House of Representatives as the Kremlin warned that passage of the bill would, quote, further ruin Ukraine and cause more deaths. Ukrainian commanders and analysts say the long-awaited $61 billion military aid package, including $13.8 billion for Ukraine to buy weapons, will help slow Russia's incremental advances in the war's third year, but that more likely will be needed for Kyiv to regain the offensive. The House swiftly approved $95 billion in foreign aid for Ukraine, Israel, and other U.S. allies in a rare Saturday session as Democrats and Republicans banded together after months of hard right resistance over renewed American support for repelling Russia's full-scale invasion. Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky, who had warned that his country, he was grateful for U.S. lawmakers' decision. Speaking on NBC's Meet the Press, Zelensky said that the aid package would send the Kremlin a powerful signal that Ukraine will not be the second Afghanistan. Zelensky said Ukraine would prioritize long-range weapons and air defenses to break the plans of Russia in an expected full-scale offensive for which Ukrainian forces are preparing. The aid package will go to the U.S. Senate, which could pass it as soon as Tuesday. U.S. President Joe Biden promised to sign it immediately. it still could take weeks for it to reach the front line where it is desperately needed. With this, we can stop Russian troops and reduce our losses, said infantry soldier Alexander. He has been fighting around Avdiivka, the city in the Donetsk region that Ukraine lost to Russia in February after months of intense combat. Ammunition shortages linked to the aid holdup over the past 6 months have led Ukrainian military commanders to ration shells, a disadvantage that Russia seized on this year. The Russians come at us in waves. We become exhausted. We have to leave our positions. This is repeated many times, Alexander told the Associated Press. He did not give his full name for security reasons. Not having enough ammunition means we can't cover the area that is our responsibility to hold when they are assaulting us. In Kyiv, many welcomed the U.S. vote as a piece of good news after a tough period that has seen Russia grind out gains along the front line and step up attacks on Ukraine's energy system and other infrastructure. I heard our president officially say that we can lose the war without this help. Thanks very much, and yesterday was a great event, said Katerina Rudka, 43. Tatiana Revchenuk, the wife of a Ukrainian soldier, noted the need for more weapons, lamenting that soldiers have nothing to protect us. They need weapons. They need gear. They need it. We always need help, because without help, our enemy can advance further and can be the center of our city, the 26-year-old said. Jeff, back to you.
In the News Digest, a car crashes into a party. Two are killed and several hurt. Dayline Berlin Township, Michigan. A young mother, a young brother and sister died, and several people were injured, some of them seriously, when a vehicle driven by a suspected drunken driver crashed into a young child's birthday party Saturday at a boat club, a Michigan sheriff said. An 8-year-old girl and her 5-year-old brother died at the scene when a 66-year-old woman drove 25 feet into the building about 3 p.m. at Swan Creek Boat Club in Berlin Township, Michigan. That's about 30 miles south of Detroit. Monroe County Sheriff Troy Goodbro said. Three children and six adults were taken to area hospitals by two helicopters or ambulances with life-threatening injuries, he said. Others injured were given first aid at the scene, and some were taken to hospitals by private vehicles. 15 riders were injured in a Universal tram accident, Universal City, California. 15 people suffered mostly minor injuries when a tram used for tours crashed into a railing at Universal Studios Hollywood near Los Angeles, authorities said. Los Angeles County Fire Department units responded shortly after 9 p.m. Saturday to the theme park in Universal City, about 10 miles northwest of downtown L.A., the agency said in a social media post. The California Highway Patrol said that while the tram was negotiating a turn, its last car collided with a metal gut guardrail, causing it to tilt and eject multiple passengers. The Highway Patrol is leading the investigation. The agency said alcohol and drugs were not considered factors. A Universal Studios Hollywood spokesperson confirmed the accident but did not provide details. Carol, I believe it's time for obituaries. We'll head back to you.
Thank you, Jeff. And we have a lot of obituaries. These were printed in yesterday's paper, but were not read. We will start with the pending funerals and then go to the obituaries. The first pending funeral is for David K. Burkett, 87, Rock Island, Illinois. He passed away Friday, April 19th, 2024, at his home. Arrangements at Whelan Presley Funeral Home and Crematory in Milan. Todd A. De La Rosa, 59, of Moline, passed away Thursday, April 18, 2024, at his home. Arrangements are pending at Rafferty Funeral Home in Moline. Carol Jean Hunt Guzzo, 69, of Davenport, passed away Monday, April 15, 2024, at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City. Services are pending at McGinnis Chambers Funeral Home in Bettendorf, Iowa. Dorothy, known as Dot Hageman, 72, of DeWitt, Iowa, passed away Tuesday, April 16, 2024, in her home. Arrangements are in the care of Schultz Funeral Home in DeWitt. Adam D. Musser, 43, of Coralville, Iowa, passed away Thursday, April 18, 2024. Cremation will be directed by Mississippi Valley Cremation and direct burial in Moline. Patricia Maitich Springer, 76, of Moline, passed away Friday, April 19, 2024, at Allure Moline. Arrangements are pending at the Van Ho Funeral Home in East Moline. Arrangements are pending at Fry Funeral Home in Tipton. I'm jumping on to the next one. I'm sorry, folks. It is East Moline for Patricia Maitich Springer. John Perry, J.P. Nelson, 59, of West Branch, Iowa, died Friday, April 19, 2024, in West Branch. Arrangements are pending with Fry Funeral Home in Tipton. And our final funeral notice is for Richard W. Dick Snyder, 71, of Davenport, who passed away Saturday, April 20, 2024, at Genesis Medical Center, East Rushholm Street Campus in Davenport. Arrangements at Halligan McCabe DeVry Funeral Home in Davenport.
Marianne Finch, age 81, of Preemption, Illinois, died on Monday, April 15th at Clarissa C. Cook Hospice House in Bettendorf. There'll be a private family graveside service at Preemption Cemetery. Memorials may be made to St. Jude's Children's Hospital. She was the fourth child of eight and the first to be born in the hospital to Frank and Mary Pettigo Armstrong of Monmouth. She was the only fair head and blue eyes in the family. She was raised and educated in Monmouth School. She attended First Baptist Church, where she sang in the choir and was president of the youth club. She married the love of her life, Gary Finch of Roseville, on October 30th, 1959, and they were married until his passing on April 16th, 2019. Their love lasted 60 years, and both lived as they believe in NET, which was their motto, meaning never enough time. They honestly believed no one could have a marriage with more love than they shared. God blessed them with four children, Mary Elizabeth, Gary Jr., Sean, and Timothy. Mary was lucky enough to be a stay-at-home mother. She was considered an excellent housekeeper and cook. She loved giving great parties. Arrangements entrusted to the care of the Whelan Presley Funeral Home and Crematory in Milan. To leave condolences for the family, visit WhelanPresley.com.
Peggy A. Steerwalt, 80, of Wilton, Iowa, formerly of Walcott, passed away Tuesday, April 16, 2024. Per her wishes, cremation rites have been accorded. Services will be held at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, April 24th, in the Runge Orungi Mortuary Chapel, with visitation beginning at 9 a.m. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made in her honor to the Walcott Volunteer Fire Department or Wilton Retirement Community. Online condolences may be expressed at www.rungimortuary.com. Peggy was born January 14, 1944, to Darlo and Shirley Cook in Cleveland, Ohio. On December 13, 1992, she was united in marriage to Jerry Steerwalt in Davenport, Iowa. She worked at Rockwell for many years and retired from Gramp Realty as a secretary. Those left to celebrate her life include children Rhonda, husband Gary Morrison of Bluegrass, Iowa, Ed and wife Joy Williams of Davenport, Iowa, Lynette and a husband Lonnie Robertson of Bluegrass, Iowa, stepchildren Carrie, wife Julie Steerwalt of Phoenix, Arizona, numerous grandchildren and great-grandchildren, sister Darlene and Fred, husband Fred Turner, and brother Bill and wife Chris Spindell, preceded in death by her parents, husband Jerry, stepson Scott Steerwalt, and brother Philip Bendel. Back to Jeff.
James Jamie J. Vermeer, age 57, of Hillsdale, died Thursday, April 18, at Mercy One Clinton Medical Center in Clinton. Services will be at 10 a.m. Thursday, April 25th, at Gibson Bodie Funeral Home in Port Byron, Illinois. Visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. Wednesday at the funeral home. Burial will be in the Fulton Cemetery. Memorials may be made to St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. Jamie was born March 31, 1967, in Rock Island, to James E. and Virginia Eileen Vermeer. He attended Hampton and later Riverdale schools. Jamie went to work at Tyson in Joslyn, Illinois, in 1985 and worked in maintenance. He also had a lawn mowing and snow plowing business for several years. He married Jeanette Byzance on December 1st, 2001. Jamie survived by his mother, Virginia Shipper of Fulton, children Sean Vermeer, wife Melissa Olson, Donahue, Iowa, Amanda Vermeer, Port Byron, Jared Vermeer, Gatesville, Texas, Anna Vermeer, Rock Island, former spouse and friend Jeanette Byzance Vermeer, brother Jason Vermeer, Port Byron, half-sister Susan and husband Keith Rezin, grandchildren Autumn, Annabelle, and Stephen Earl, Riker and Journey Vermeer, Gentry Vermeer, nieces and nephews. He was preceded in death by his father, James Edmund Vermeer, and stepfather, Ken Shipper. Half-brothers, Kevin and Jim Shipper, grandmother, and good friend, Brian Moffat. Share a memory or condolence at GibsonBodieFH.com.
Elizabeth Ann Malone. Funeral services for Elizabeth Ann Malone, 85, of Bettendorf, will be at 2 p.m. on Saturday, April 27, 2024, at McGinnis Chambers Funeral Home in Bettendorf. Burial will follow at Davenport Memorial Park Cemetery. Family will greet friends on Saturday from 1 p.m. to service time at the funeral home. Elizabeth passed away on Thursday, April 18, 2024, at the Clarissa C. Cook Hospice House in Bettendorf. Elizabeth Ann Madden was born January 11, 1939, in Davenport, the daughter of Charles and Nora Fee Madden. She graduated from Davenport High School in 1957, and a few days later married Richard Henry Malone on June 12, 1957. She was preceded in death by her parents. Let's start with survivors. Her survivors include her husband Richard of Bettendorf, her children Richard and wife Paula Malone of Orange County, California, Carla Lowry of Davenport, grandchildren Ann Jolly, Connor Malone, sister Myona Morell, and many nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents and daughters Alice Newcomb, Julie Mirfield, a grandson Russell Jolly, and brothers Charles Madden and Michael Madden. Memorials may be directed to the Clarissa C. Cook Hospice House in Bettendorf. The family would like to thank the staff at the Clarissa C. Cook Hospice House for the care given to Elizabeth. Online condolences may be shared with the family at www.mcginnis-chambers.com. Jeff?
Edith Tillis Hoffman, age 95, of Bettendorf, died peacefully on Tuesday, March 26th, at the Fountain Senior Living Center in Bettendorf. A memorial mass will be celebrated at 11 a.m. Saturday, April 27th, at Sacred Heart Cathedral in Davenport. Burial will be at Mount Calvary Cemetery in Davenport. Visitation will be held from 9 a.m. until the time of the service in the gathering space at church. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Quad City Symphony Children's Music Program, the Figge Art Gallery, or Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Halligan McCabe DeVries Funeral Home is assisting the family with arrangements. Edith Rodriguez Erdman was born on September 3, 1928, in Tampico, Mexico, the third of six children of Rafael and Edith Erdman Rodriguez. She graduated from Colegio Francés de San Cosme in 1948. Following her matriculation, she attended typography classes and secretarial schooling. Tillis worked her way up to be executive secretary to the president of a large company in Mexico. On April 20, 1963, she was united in marriage to Dr. Ronald Joseph Hoffman in Cuernavaca, Mexico. Following their marriage, the Hoffmans moved to Chicago, where Dr. Hoffman finished his residency in ophthalmology. In 1964, the Hoffmans moved to Davenport to start the Davenport Eye Group with Ron's brother, Dr. William B. Hoffman. The Hoffmans would return to Mexico annually to visit family and simultaneously started a free clinic in Huasca, Mexico, providing comprehensive ophthalmologic care to indigenous peoples. They were so committed to this cause that they continued work there for 30 years. Tillis always had a great love of the arts. She was a great supporter of the Figge Art Museum, Putnam Museum, Quad City Symphony, and the Catholic Service Board. Tillis spoke English, Spanish, and French, and enjoyed meeting regularly with her French group until COVID changed life for everyone. She was very proud to pass on her love of Mexico and the Spanish language to her children and her grandchildren, but was also very honored to eventually become an American citizen. Those left to carry on Tillis' memory are her son and daughter-in-law, Dr. R. Michael and Isabel Hoffman of Ada, Michigan, grandchildren Benjamin, Alexis, and Brandon, a brother Franz Erdman of Mexico, a cousin, Siobhan Bertrip, also of Mexico, and many adoring nieces and nephews, both in the United States and Mexico. Online condolences may be expressed by visiting hmdfuneralhome.com.
A.J. Gabor. A.J. Gabor is most well known for his familiar duties as son, brother, and uncle. He was born alongside his twin sister, Missy, to Ginny and John Gabor on May 25, 1985. His older siblings, Maria and Sean, were thrilled to double their family and welcomed the new babies with open, unsteady arms of any 2- and 3-year-old. A 2003 graduate of Bettendorf High School, AJ spent his formative years in the Quad Cities before moving to Chicago for a change of scenery, and finally making a home in Snowmass, Colorado. A celebration of life for his local friends and family was held March 17, 2024, at the Hotel Jerome, where loved ones shared tears, laughs, and special memories. A celebration of life will be held in the Quad Cities over Mother's Day weekend. Reach out to his family for details. Please keep AJ's memory alive by sharing stories with his friends and family.
Gordon S. Fowler, age 100, passed away at his home on April 16, 2024 in Davenport. Services will be held at Wirtz Funeral Home on Monday, April 29th. Visitation will be held from 10 to 3 p.m., with service to follow after 3 p.m., enishment will take place at a later date at Oakdale Memorial Gardens. Memories may be left to St. John's United Methodist Church or a charity of your choosing. Online condolences may be expressed at wirtzfh.com. Fowler was born October 4, 1923, near Lorville, to Dave and Mabel Stenogle Fowler. He graduated from school in 1941, enlisted in the Air Corps in 1942, and served his country well, earning the Distinguished Flying Cross and other medals on an extended tour of duty, flying the hump in the China-Burma-India theater. He began his public relations career in Spirit Lake Chamber of Commerce. He married Sharon Fuqua in 1950, later moving to the Davenport Chamber of Commerce in 1952. He joined Ramsey Advertising Agency and was there until 1998, continued working part-time in marketing and public relations through 2014 at TAG Communications in Davenport, retiring at 90 years old. Among family members left to honor his memory are his daughters Paula and husband Brad Witt of Davenport, and Linda and husband Kevin McGonnell of Cleveland, Ohio. He was preceded in death by his wife Sharon, son Keith, daughter Laura, his brother, and his parents.
Dean S. Arney, 91, of Bettendorf, Iowa, died Monday, April 15th, 2024, at the Lutheran Living Community in Davenport, Iowa. A memorial service to celebrate his life will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, May 11th, 2024, at Asbury United Methodist Church of Bettendorf, where he was a longtime member. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m., also on Saturday at the church. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Quad Cities Bicycle Club. That's QCBC. McGinnis Chambers Funeral Home of Bettendorf is assisting the family with arrangements. Dean was born in Marshalltown, Iowa, July 5, 1932, the eldest of five to Max and Elizabeth Stokes Arney. In his youth, he spent much of his time working on the family dairy farm and orchard. After graduating from Marshalltown High School, he attended Iowa State University, participating in the wrestling team, and received his bachelor's degree in engineering. He later obtained a master's degree in business from the University of Iowa. He briefly left college to work in Alaska and the oil rigs in Louisiana, touring the country on the back of a motorcycle, which he sold before returning to Marshalltown to ensure that his mother did not find out. On June 15, 1955, he was united in marriage to Marilyn, known as Joey Osdahl, in Marshalltown, raising the family and traveling to many countries throughout their lives together. They started their life together in Minneapolis, eventually making their home in Bettendorf, where Dean was employed with International Harvester for 25 years, and later with J.I. Case Company, from where he retired. Retirement was short-lived, and he returned on contract working for several years in both England and France. Those left to honor his memory include his wife of over 68 years, Joey, his children Gregory, wife Sherry Arney of Bettendorf, Holly, husband Jeff McCoy of Bettendorf, Jennifer Busby of Waukesha, Wisconsin, Sarah, husband David Steele of Keystone, Iowa, 9 grandchildren, 15 great-grandchildren, his brothers Craig Arney of Golden Valley, Minnesota, Paul Arney of Postville, Iowa, and Herb and wife Teresa Arney of Albion, Iowa, and many other relatives and wonderful friends. Dean was preceded in death by his sister, Naomi Thede, brother-in-law, Norm Thede, sisters-in-law, Claudia Arney, and Jereen Arney, and son-in-law, Bob Busby.
Jerry Luders. A memorial service to celebrate the life of Jerry Luders, age 71, of Moline, will be held at noon on Monday, April 22nd, at the Halligan McCabe DeVries Funeral Home in Davenport. Private interment will be at St. Calvary Cemetery in Davenport. Memorials may be made to King's Harvest Pet Rescue. Ms. Luders passed away Wednesday, April 17th, at the Clarissa C. Cook Hospice House in Bettendorf. Jerry Lee Scott was born September 1st, 1952, in Davenport, a daughter of Gerald and Frances Shoemaker Scott. Survivors include her children, Karen and husband John Payne of Canfield, Ohio, Larry, spouse Jennifer Luters of Aquapa, Illinois, grandchildren Jonathan Luters, Ashley Luters, Simone Scott, Isaiah Payne, Xavier Payne, great-grandchildren Lila, Niella, Noah, Emery, brother Gerald, and spouse Angela Scott of Davenport, sisters Nancy and spouse Michael Otzel of Davenport, and Sherry, spouse Julio Granger Gerard of Manhattan, New York, and her cat Opie. She was preceded in death by her grandson Terrell Scott, brother John Scott, and parents, and her best friend Becky Cecil. Online remembrances may be expressed at hmdfuneralhome.com.
Janice E. Diamond, 61, of Davenport, passed away Friday, April 19, 2024, at Genesis East Medical Center in Davenport. Visitation will be at noon, from noon to 2 p.m. on Thursday, April 25, 2024, at the Runge Mortuary and Crematory in Davenport. Her funeral service will follow at 2 p.m. in the Runge Chapel. Cremation will follow with placement in the National Cemetery in Rock Island, Illinois. Please share condolences at www.rungemortuary.com. Janice was born July 21, 1962, in Rock Island, Illinois, to Robert and Joanne Lindquist Petrilli. She was united in marriage to Louis Jim Diamond on June 20, 1992, in Moline, Illinois. Janice had been employed as a postal clerk for 28 years prior to her retirement from the U.S. Postal Service. Survivors include her husband, Jim Diamond, of Davenport, two sons, Mitch, wife Meredith Diamond, in Davenport, and Drake Diamond in Rock Island, Illinois, one granddaughter, Juniper, sister Susan, and husband Joe Basala in Bettendorf, brother Kevin Petrilli Co., and nieces and nephews, Rachel and Alex Basala, Cody and Elisa Petrilli, and Savon Wyant. Janice was preceded in death by her parents and a sister-in-law, Renee Petrilli.
And finally, Kathleen Jean Carter, age 73, of Davenport, passed away on February 24th. There will be a celebration of life at 1 p.m. on Saturday, April 27th, at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of the Quad Cities, located at 3707 Eastern Avenue in Davenport. Memorials can be made to the UUCQC, that is the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of the Quad Cities.
And from opinion page, hike legal immigration to stem migrant surge. Given a former President Donald Trump's rhetoric during the Republican primaries, immigration enforcement at our southern border is likely to be a major focus of his presidential campaign. But any solution to our border difficulties must entail reforms that make legal immigration more plausible for would-be immigrants. Trump said in a Super Tuesday speech last month that things are happening that are unthinkable at the border. There are millions of people invading our country. This is an invasion. Though his rhetoric is extreme, undocumented immigrants had a record 2.5 million encounters with border agents in 2023, causing difficulties for many communities. Increased enforcement alone will not solve our problems. Migrants have massive economic opportunities in the United States. So the root cause of undocumented immigration is U.S. policy that essentially prohibits legal migration for most people. According to U.S. Customs and Border Protection, Mexicans accounted for more than 30% of the people apprehended or denied entry at the border over the last 4 years. Hondurans, 9.2%, Guatemalans, 9%, Venezuelans, 5.8%, and Cubans, 5.8%. percent rounded out the top five nationalities attempting to enter the United States illegally. The economic gains for low-skilled migrants from those countries are massive. Economists Michael Clemens, Claudio Montenegro, and Lent Pritchard estimate that a 35-year-old Mexican male with less than a high school education earns about 2.5 times more in the United States than in Mexico. Guatemalans earn close to 3 times more. Venezuelans, 6.5 times more than in their home countries. Though data are unavailable for Hondurans and Cubans, the magnitudes are likely similar. No plausible legal path to the United States exists for most people from those countries unless they are a spouse, a child, or a parent of a U.S. citizen. Family connections account for nearly 80% of all legal immigrations to the United States, but visa applications for anyone from those countries with family connections beyond spouses, children, and parents are backlogged. For example, 1.2 million Mexican siblings of U.S. citizens are waiting for permission to migrate. Still, only 5,600 of those visas are issued annually. Jeff, back to you.
Well, that brings us to the end of the Quad City Times for today. I'm Jeff Cassett. My partner at the microphone has been Carol Lockard. You can listen to IRIS programs on any computer or smart device at any time at iowaradioreading.org. Thank you for listening to IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.